Coming this Easter Sunday, sacred music for the Easter season. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world. Coming Easter Sunday at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I think it's one of the most fascinating resurrection accounts of the four Gospels. Matthew tells us something that we don't get elsewhere. The resurrection occurs when an angel descends from heaven. He rolls away the stone, he sits on it, revealing an empty tomb. Jesus has risen, and then Jesus himself appears to these women, fleeing the tomb to tell the disciples that Christ has overcome death. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Easter Monday. It's April the 9th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Jeff Gibbs joins us to talk about the resurrection of Christ according to Matthew's Gospel here in the first hour. In the second hour, we'll study the Easter hymn, I Know That My Redeemer Lives, with Dr. Ken Sherb. Dr. Jeff Gibbs is professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, and he's author of the two-volume Concordia Commentary on Matthew. Dr. Gibbs, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Todd, thank you. It's good to be here.
All of the gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all tell the same story in really very different ways when it comes to the resurrection account.
Now, yes, they do.
In the case of Matthew, what is Matthew saying? I mean, he's always trying to say something. What is he saying in telling the story of Jesus' resurrection the way he is?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question, Todd. As you say, the gospel writers all have the same fundamental message, that is, death has been overturned by the Son of God, and then we are left to spend the rest of our lives believing and rejoicing in what that means. But I think maybe there are two things, one very large and, in a sense, one smaller and more focused, two contributions that Matthew's account makes. And I heard you allude to some of them in the introduction to our conversation. That is, to use a somewhat of a technical term, Matthew's account is very apocalyptic and eschatological. That is, just as when Christ dies in Matthew 27, all heck breaks loose, right? You have earthquakes and darkness, but Matthew alone tells us that this mysterious thing that some dead believers were actually raised from the dead when Jesus dies. And about this, of course, we know absolutely nothing other than what Matthew gives us. But the point is, this is eschatological. That is to say, it partakes of the eschaton, which is the last day. So as hard as it is for us to grasp this, that final judgment day in which God puts all things right and casts every enemy under his feet, that day happened on Good Friday in Jesus, to Jesus, and through Jesus for us. And the same thing is true of Easter. That is, there's an earthquake, the angel descends, and the dead guards are the only dead people there. So Matthew gives us a bit of an extra emphasis that final day of resurrection, when God puts all things right, has already started. It's happened to Jesus, and again, because it's happened to Jesus, it's for us. So that's the big picture thing. The small detail that I also like is that there's an emphasis upon the reliability of Jesus' own words. So if you look at what the angel says, verse 6 of Matthew 28, he is not here, he was raised, for he was raised just as he said. And then the angel tells them to go to Galilee. Behold, I have said this to you. And so there's a nice emphasis upon the reliability of Jesus' words, which have now come true just as he said. So that at least are two, one big picture thing and one kind of smaller detail that Matthew gives us.
Speaking of those details, tell me if there's something to this, because the account begins in the 28th chapter of Matthew. there in the first verse. And in English, it doesn't exactly come across. There are two mentions of the Sabbath there. In the original language, he actually indicates the first day of the week by saying it's after the Sabbath.
Right.
But he says this, that this has taken place after the Sabbath. Is there something to that reference to the Sabbath in Matthew's gospel here?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure I would make too much of it. I have heard, you know, some people argue that, you know, the Sabbath is the end of the week. Now it's a new week. And then they want to expand that idea that, almost as if that reference indicates a kind of a new creation. You know, remembering the first creation was completed and God rested, and now God is doing a new thing. I'm certainly sympathetic to that theology, and I think it's true. I'm not sure that Matthew drags all of that along with that one reference to the Sabbath. But what's really interesting about the accounts, Todd, all four of them, is that they're very spare in terms of the interpretation that's given. You know, none of the gospel writers says Jesus rose from the dead, and this means that Christians will rise on the last day, or Jesus rose from the dead, and this means that God's promises to renew the creation have now begun. You know, none of them says anything like that. They just tell the story, you know, and they almost in a sense, they leave it to the epistles, you know, to flesh out and to explicitly talk about, okay, what does this mean? What difference does this make now and in the future? So
it's a little difficult to tell who's where when things happen. Now, now after the Sabbath, toward the dawn of the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, I like that reference there.
They went
to the tomb, and then, and behold, there was a great earthquake, for the angel of the Lord descended from heaven. Are they there to witness this, or is he flashing back?
This is very chaotic. You're right, and it's very hard to tell. So, you know, do we envision the two Marys? And of course, Mark tells us that other women were there as well. Do they see the angel? Do they watch the guards fall to the ground like dead people? It's just not clear. I tend to think it's a flashback, and that, you know, the women stumble upon the situation, you know, after the angel is there, and of course they see the angel and he speaks to them. But yeah, I like very much the fact that it is hard to tell, even within Matthew's account, where everybody is standing when. But I also like the fact that although it can be done, it's hard to harmonize the accounts. You know, you've tried that as well. I know we just aren't given all those kinds of details that would, you know, make that an easy task. But I'd like to think that the most important event in all of history would be a little chaotic and a little bit hard for us to figure out, and that I'm just fine with that. So,
what we don't get is, in this account, kind of generally speaking, is the angel descending, rolling away the stone, and there's Jesus kind of standing ready to emerge from the tomb, as we often see in art. Yep. I mean, it's well-intended art about the resurrection, Jesus kind of popping out of the grave.
Right.
But we don't
right.
see that here.
No, the stone is rolled away to reveal that Jesus isn't there. Yeah, Christ is not limited at this point by space and time the way we are in our physicality. His physicality is so powerful that it sort of transcends ours. It's not less than ours, it's more. So yeah, you're right. There is this, I think it's the apocryphal, I think it's the Gospel of Peter that was written in the 2nd or 3rd century that actually depicts angels sort of carrying Jesus out of the tomb, you know, as a, you know, later legendary something that someone made up. But no, you're quite right. The well-meaning artwork. In fact, I saw a piece of art. I think it was on Facebook or someplace. Someone had posted it on their page, and they were, you know, just praising the beauty and the wonder of this piece of art, and it was inaccurate because it showed exactly what you described. The angel rolled away the stone, and there's Jesus standing in the tomb. He's gone. He's already. And that brings up an interesting question, the answer to which doesn't really matter. But if Christ has risen on the third day, as you know, that begins, you know, at sundown on Saturday, and this is now Sunday morning. So if there is an answer to the question, at what moment does Christ actually overcome death? And the answer is, we don't know. It could have been during the night on Saturday. It could have been, you know, very close up, as we might say, to the events that announce it, the angel and the rolling away of the stone and so forth. But again, those questions are not invalid, but we're simply not given the answers.
Well, not to discount his appearances, because, you know, all but Mark really do put an emphasis on his appearance here, risen from the dead.
Absolutely.
Is there something, with about a minute here before our break, in the fact that what you mentioned first, that we're kind of left to simply hang on what Jesus had already said about his resurrection a minute before we break?
Right. Well, that's one of the functions of Easter, is that it simply takes it takes us back to Jesus' ministry that was so unexpected and so not the way people thought it would be. And when we take it seriously, it's so not the way we normally think about God and his work. And Easter simply puts the stamp of approval. It does much more than that, but it puts the stamp of approval on everything that Jesus had claimed and said and did in his entire ministry.
Dr. Jeff Gibbs is our guest on this Easter Monday. It's April the 9th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about the resurrection of Christ according to Matthew's Gospel. Dr. Gibbs is professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He's author of the two-volume Concordia Commentary on Matthew. When we come back, again, a little detail. But when the angel has rolled away the stone, he sits down on it. Now, I work from a seated position, but I think most people in first century Palestine were on their feet when they were working. Is there something about him sitting down there? Job over, it's finished, everything's accomplished. We'll find out after this.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.
Have you ever wanted a concise resource on the history of Christianity from the time of the apostles through today? Well, we have just the book for you. It's titled The Church from Age to Age, A History from Galilee to Global Christianity. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase The Church from Age to Age by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Church from Age to Age, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April.
Grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Thank you. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Easter Monday, April the 9th. We're talking with Dr. Jeff Gibbs about the resurrection of Christ according to Matthew's Gospel. He's author of the two-volume Concordia Commentary on Matthew. You can find out more about these great Bible commentaries at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Or you can purchase the Concordia Commentaries on Matthew by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Gibbs, is there something to the fact that the angel, having rolled away the stone, just sits down? We'll get to the guards in a second and the women, but he sits down upon it. It seems like all the angels are sitting someplace in the resurrection accounts.
Yeah, it is an interesting detail, isn't it? I rather like the contrast, if I can back up just a couple of words. Verse 2 says, "And look, or behold, there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and he approached and rolled away the stone." Now, if you back up to chapter 27, verse 60, talking about, Joseph of Arimathea's loving deed, where he put Jesus' corpse, he put it, literally, in his new tomb, and he rolled up a great stone to the door of the tomb, and he went away. And as you know, Todd, Greek has lots of verbs where you have a basic verb and then you put a preposition or a little word on the front. And in chapter 27, verse 60, it's toward rolled. And in 28, verse 2, it's away rolled. So it's like Joseph was well-meaning, and he, no doubt he thought the stone was going to stay there. But I like the contrast there, that Joseph rolls the stone up and the angel rolls the stone away. And I'm not quite sure, he sat upon it. Certainly sounds like a sort of a triumphant, so there kind of note. As you said, sort of dusting off his hands and saying, now this is available for all the world to see. Again, he's not letting Jesus out, but he's revealing that God has acted now in raising his son from the dead, and there can be God is not ashamed to give physical proof, as also the appearances of Jesus will give physical, literally tangible proof of what God has now done.
We should note, shouldn't we, that this is a tomb that has been sealed in some sense. I don't know what that means. You'll have to explain it. And the guard has been set. For what reason?
Well, as you know, the enemies of Jesus in some ways are paying more attention to his teaching than his own disciples. Again, this is a unique detail that only Matthew gives us at the end of 27, where it happens to be Pharisees who had spent, probably more time listening to Jesus than the chief priests and Sadducees, because they're scattered around the land and they're his chief opponents up north in Galilee, right? So they've heard and picked up this message that Jesus has predicted that after 3 days he'll rise from the dead. They have no idea what this means, and of course they don't believe it. But in order to head off any, as if the disciples would be brave enough to do this, but any attempt by the disciples to pretend that Jesus had been raised from the dead, they go to Pilate, as you know, and they request a guard. It's a little unclear as to whether or not it's a temple guard, that is to say Jewish troops. I rather tend to think it's Roman soldiers. Per se, Roman mercenaries, but they place some sort of a seal. I don't know if we know enough to be specific about what it is, but it has the authority of the Roman governor on it that says, stay out. It's like yellow tape that the police put around an emergency, a crime scene, right? Don't go in here. You go in here, you get into trouble. And so all the best that Jesus' opponents can do is simply not even close to being good enough. And the angel just sort of brushes them aside, and his appearance, which Matthew describes for us briefly, is so overwhelming that the guards simply faint. And again, ironically, they become like dead people. They're the only dead people around.
Is that on purpose? Because in all of the, we talked earlier about the artistic depictions of the resurrection, We got Jesus in there. We might have a few angels in there, a scattering of women. I don't think, except in some of the more ancient ones, you see guards lying on the ground like dead.
Right, right. And this is part of the chaos of the scene, is we don't know how long the guards were there. You know, in verse 8, we get the women departing the tomb. And then in verse 11, you know, as they were going, which refers to the women, look, some of the guard went. So, so are they on the ground, terrified but conscious, and just waiting for the women to leave, and presumably the angel disappears, and then they get up? Again, it's a very disorganized scene, and we just don't know the precise sequence and sort of spatial relationships.
Does Matthew want us to see this scene in the mind's eye, as you've said before, as the guards are as though dead, but Jesus is most certainly alive?
I think that's an irony. Yes, indeed, and that's what you know. That's what the angel says. See, you are seeking Jesus. I know that you are seeking Jesus who has been crucified. He is not here, for he was raised, or he rose just as he said. And then there's a little touch here. The angel says, come look at the place where he, and the English translations typically say where he lay or something like that. But as you know, Todd, and as our pastors and others who have studied Greek know, this is not an aorist verb, it's an imperfect. And so I actually like to translate it where he used to lie. He was there before, but he's not there anymore. So
the whole emphasis here in the angel's words, especially to the women, is that this crucified thing, and he still is the one who was crucified.
Yes, yes.
But the dead part is over.
Yes, and permanently over. See, this is something, it's a little bit obvious, but sometimes I find that Christians haven't really grappled with, in a sense, the simple fact, and then the implications of the fact. That is, there were other people in the history of the world who were physically alive and who died. They really did die. Lazarus, of course, comes to mind. In the Old Testament, we have several miracles like this. And then God's power, we would say, revived them from death or revivified them. But the life to which they came back is the same mortal existence, so that all those people, in a sense, well, not in a sense, they actually died twice. See, so they died, and then God in mercy brought them back to life, restored them to their families, to the community, and so forth. But then at some point in time, they simply got old and died, just like all the people that Jesus healed in his ministry got sick again and died. See? But with Christ, and the epistles here are the ones who are the sources that make this absolutely clear. When Jesus is raised from the dead, he has permanently undone death. And then that invites the question, well, why is that so important? And then that invites the question, what implications does that have for our world and for our future and for our life right now? So Jesus, as Paul says in Romans 6, He died once, but death no longer has mastery over him. It still does, actually. Death still does have mastery over me and over you. And unless Christ returns quickly, you know, we will die. And we'll die because we're sinners. And death, which won't separate us from Christ, will nevertheless separate us from ourselves and from our loved ones. But God is not content for that to be the case. He will act to undo death just because he did it in the person of his son.
These women, at least some of them, are they among the same women who witnessed the dead Jesus? And they're the word, like you said before, is corpse. The dead,
yes.
Jesus placed in the tomb by Joseph of Arimathea. Had they witnessed the burial too?
Yes, yes, Matthew is, I think all the evangelists do this to a greater or lesser extent, but again, if you back up to chapter 27, verse 61, you get the same, precisely the same phrasing, Mary the Magdalene and, as you pointed out, the other Mary. So they're sitting, watching, verse 61, while Joseph has placed Jesus' corpse into his own tomb. And so they know the place. And so there's this powerful, beautiful contrast. And again, all against all their expectations, people in the ancient world know that death is a one-way street, right? And the Romans are very good at killing people. So the women, none of the people who came to the tomb early on the first Easter morning expected to find anything other than a sealed tomb. In the other Gospels, as you know, the question arises from the women, well, how are we going to finish anointing the body because this stone is too big? See, nobody expects anything to have changed.
Dr. Jeff Gibbs is our guest. We're talking about the resurrection of Christ according to Matthew's Gospel. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're coming to you on this Easter Monday, April the 9th. When we come back, he says, now go, and you'll find Jesus in Galilee. Well, of course, we know from the rest of the verses, Jesus finds them before they even get a few steps away from the tomb. We'll talk about that after this.
Hi, this is Jonathan Collin from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
Thank you, Todd, and thanks for everything you do.
Pastor Matt Harrison, President of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on the value of Issues, etc.
You've done so much to teach so many people about the depth of the gospel and to find joy in the Christian life and experience.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans. Issues, etc. Listen to what you want, when you want, at issuesetc.org.
Christological.
My friends, Jesus comes only for sinners.
Historical.
I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and in Jesus Christ, his only Son, our Lord, who was conceived by...
Sacramental.
Take and eat. This is the true body of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, given unto death for your sins.
To find a Christological, historical, and sacramental church near you, go to issuesetc.org and click Find a Church. Christological, creedal, confessional. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Former President Jimmy Carter recently made news when he urged the Democrat Party to moderate its position on abortion. Currently, it supports unrestricted abortion throughout pregnancy, including tax funding. President Carter's comments were surprising yet welcome. They're surprising because as Governor of Georgia and President, he personally opposed abortion but still supported it. I vividly recall demonstrating against Mr. Carter during his presidential campaign. The big, toothy grin he's known for noticeably disappeared when he saw the big banner we had unfurled at his campaign stop. President Carter told the media, except for rare exceptions, "I never have approved of any abortions." He's always talked out of both sides of his mouth on abortion, but this time I hope he's sincere.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoda, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming. Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana. Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back. We're talking about the resurrection of Christ according to Matthew's Gospel. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Jeff Gibbs is our guest. He's professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Folks, if you appreciate Bible studies like this one, please consider making a special contribution during the Easter season. No gift is too small. And for any size donation between now and Ascension Day, that's May 17th, we'll send you a recording of sermons that I've preached on the resurrection of Jesus and the ascension of Christ. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. The address again, LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. Now, when you donate, please let us know if you want these sermons sent to you in a downloadable format or on a CD. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind during the Easter season. Dr. Gibbs, the emphasis here is on Galilee. Go tell the disciples, but tell them he's risen from the dead and he's going before you into Galilee. And the emphasis is also found in the other gospel accounts, too. What's that about?
Well, In a way, it's the same for all of the Gospels, but Matthew has a special emphasis. If one were to flip back to the end of chapter 4, or not quite the end, but verses 12 through 16, that's kind of the end of at least what many think, including I, the end of the first section that sort of introduces Jesus, lets us know a lot about what he's going to be about, who he is, the Son of God, and so forth, the Messiah. And then at the end of that section, Jesus, after he's baptized, after his temptation, he goes north to Galilee, and Matthew tells us this is to fulfill the prophecy of Isaiah 8 and 9. That is, the people sitting in darkness will see a great light, Galilee of the Gentiles, Galilee of the nations. And it's in that unexpected place, not Jerusalem, see, it's in that unexpected northern place that Jesus' ministry of bringing light into darkness begins. Well, now that his work is completed and death is overcome, there's more light coming, if I could say it that way. And of course, obviously, Matthew gives us the meeting that Jesus has with the 11 in Galilee, and then what we normally refer to as the Great Commission. So, it's the place where Jesus' ministry publicly really gets underway. And now, having completed, he meets his disciples in that same place on a mountain, and he says, "Okay, now I have all authority, and I'm giving it to you, and I will be with you as you make disciples of all nations." So the mission will go on. It's still the mission of Christ. It's his authority. It's his promise. Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age, right? But now his disciples will be gathered again. They will be empowered with the Holy Spirit, and they'll continue the ministry that Jesus has now, in that important sense, completed.
So, I guess here the chronology is a little confusing post-resurrection. It's not that the angel or even Jesus in the subsequent verses is saying, well, you know, you're not going to get to see me until you get to Galilee. That's not
correct.
The But something's going to happen in Galilee that's very important, and you need to go up there and meet me there.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and you're right. When you compare all of the accounts, you have to make sure that you get them in the right place and right order. For instance, I've actually heard people say that Jesus gives the Great Commission before he ascends into heaven. Well, actually, that's not right, because the Great Commission is in Galilee, and his ascension is in, just outside of Jerusalem, 40 days later, right? So again, Galilee isn't that far. You know, it's about 80 miles, 90 miles, depending on where you're going. So it takes a couple of days to get there, and people are generally in better shape back then than we are. So there is a fair amount of up and down, north and south, going on here. But again, Matthew does not give us the ascension. He gives us the Great Commission. And, of course, Luke agrees with this because Jesus says, "You will be my witnesses," and then the expansion, right? Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the end of the world, right? So each of the gospel writers does it, in a sense, in his own way. But Matthew's way is to say something like this: having risen from the dead now, with all authority in heaven and earth, Jesus' work and his good news will continue to go out through, again, beginning with the apostles, through the new Israel that he is sending out into the world.
They leave the tomb quickly with the intent of running to see the disciples, filled with fear and great joy. And behold, this is verse 9, and behold, Jesus met them and said to them, "Greetings." And they came up and took hold of his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, and this is what they've just heard from the angel, "Don't be afraid. Go tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." But he does appear there to them, doesn't he?
Right. And this is unique to Matthew. Each one of the four Gospels has material in common with the others, and also things that are unique. And verse 9 is, I sometimes refer to the first part of it as the greatest hello in all of history. Because as you were reading, you know, and it's fine, Jesus greeted them and said, "Greetings." But it's odd because it's just the normal way to say hello to someone, you know. And this is the greatest hello in all of history. And I rather really like the detail, Matthew alone gives us this, that the women approached and they grabbed his feet and they worshipped him. And there's a very prolific scholar who actually studied this detail. He was curious, as to what Christian writers throughout history had made of this detail. Why would the women grab the feet of Jesus? And why? What does Matthew want us to learn by this little detail? He surveyed writers throughout the centuries, it probably means more than one thing. It probably means humility and, of course, worship, because Matthew then tells us that they worshipped him. But, and I think you'll like this, Todd, consistently in both the ancient world and the modern world, ghosts don't have feet. And, of course, you're a little younger than I am, but you think of Ghostbusters right away, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
See? So specters, phantasms, see? They float. They're figures. They can be human-like figures, but they don't have real feet. And so this one scholar, his name is Dale Allison. He's a very prolific writer and kind of an eclectic guy. But he actually argues, and this is the way the early church interpreted it most often. That is to say, the fact that Jesus has feet proves, is evidence, that it's really him. It's really his body. It's kind of like when in Luke, Jesus says, "I'm not a phantasm. Give me some fish," right? Ghosts don't eat fish. So I just love this detail. And I've actually proposed, I should maybe write to some synodical official, Todd, I'd like to have a new Easter greeting. You know, the standard one, you know, "Christ has risen, he has risen indeed." I'd like the greeting to be changed to "Christ has feet." And then the congregation could respond, "He has feet indeed." And here's another funny kind of reverse kicker to this. There are actually Gnostic documents from the 2nd and 3rd century that make the point that their Jesus, the Gnostic Jesus, doesn't leave footprints. Because the Gnostics, they don't like bodies. They don't like the physical world, right? And so their Jesus, that they make up, of course, their Jesus doesn't leave footprints. Well, guess what? Our Jesus actually has real feet. And I think that's a very beautiful and wonderful detail that Matthew gives us.
Both the angel and now the risen Christ himself say to these women, do not be afraid. What right. should we note there with just a minute or so before we go to our next break?
That when God intervenes in the world, it scares people. And that God's work is not superficial. It's not cheerful. It is literally overwhelming. And in the presence of God's direct action, the only proper human response is to be afraid. What's going on here? What is God doing? And yet this is such a word of comfort. And of course, Jesus says it repeatedly in the Gospels. Don't be afraid. In fact, it could, again, a small Greek point, be rendered, stop being afraid. You're afraid now, but you don't have to be afraid anymore because of who I am, Jesus says, and what has now been accomplished.
He calls the disciples my brothers. We got about a minute. What's there?
They're the first ones who are going to carry the message of the gospel. So all Christians, of course, are Jesus' true family, Matthew 12, right? But the brothers of Jesus will be the first ones to begin in the name of the risen Christ to carry the gospel, and then others in their train, and together as his body, the whole church.
Dr. Jeff Gibbs is our guest. It's Easter Monday, April the 9th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc., and we're talking for the next 10 minutes about the resurrection of Christ according to Matthew's gospel. Now begins, in verse 11, the cover-up, the attempt to explain away what no one can explain away, a story that persists to this day. We'll talk about the stolen body theory that goes all the way back to Jesus' opponents trying to make sense of his resurrection after this.
Coming this Easter Sunday, sacred music for the Easter season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, coming Easter Sunday at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Apostles Lutheran Church is in Melrose Park, Illinois. We invite you to our divine service, which is held every Sunday at 9:15. Please contact us at 847-455-0903 or check out our website at apostlesmelrosepark.org. We are located just south of O'Hare Airport, where airplanes are continually going up. Here at Apostles, we glory in the one who on the cross was lifted up for the sins of the world.
Truth-centered mission outreach. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a recording of an Easter and Ascension sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Ascension Day, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Easter and Ascension sermons. Now, when you make your gift, please indicate whether you want a downloadable version or a CD of these sermons. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us during the Easter season.
Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April is something that I think will resonate nicely with our listeners. Our listeners always express great interest in history, but in church history in particular. And this book that we've made, the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April, is kind of unique as a church history. It has all the same history. None of the facts have been changed. But it not only starts with the era of the apostles, as it should, it goes all the way to the present day. And that's what makes it unique. It doesn't stop at some point and say, well, you're going to have to figure out the rest for yourself. It's a church history going from the era of the apostles to the present day. It's called The Church from Age to Age, A History from Galilee to Global Christianity, fitting very nicely with our Galilee and of the Gentiles theme that we've heard from Dr. Gibbs here. You can find out more about this great church history, The Church from Age to Age, from Concordia Publishing House. Browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org, or give Concordia Publishing House a call and ask for The Church from Age to Age, A History from Galilee to Global Christianity, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Gibbs, the cover-up, I think Matthew alone gives us the details of the alternate story that is cooked up by the chief priests and the elders. What does he tell us?
Well, again, no one can deny the emptiness of the tomb. I mean, that in itself is of some significance, that we have no evidence from any source, friendly or hostile to the early Christians, that, the body is still in there and we can show you where it is. It's simply, in a way, a sort of a brute historical fact. So then this shows us, we might not be too harsh on the religious leaders, although their unbelief does seem sort of stunning. When the soldiers come, and probably not fully understanding everything at all, they tell what they saw with the angel and all that incredible stuff. The religious leaders to whom they come ask them to keep it to themselves and to spread the story that it was actually disciples who came and somehow overpowered the guard and stole the body. So, and then Matthew tells us that this account, this claim, is known even in his own day, which we're not precisely sure when Matthew is writing, but I would put it sometime probably in the later, mid to late 50s, so maybe 15, 20, 25 years later. But it's of some interest, and it's really significant. It shows us that Easter is not an idea. It's not a wishful thought. It's actually an event. There's an empty tomb, and then there are appearances of the risen Jesus to many disciples. Of course, Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 gives us the most extensive list of those appearances. Easter shows that God cares about this world, and he does his work in this world, and this world belongs to him, and he intends to completely take it back.
Now, you mentioned in passing earlier in our conversation that you think these are Roman guards. I take it that's because they're concerned about the governor, namely Pilate, hearing about there's falling asleep on the job.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's evidence to that effect. The difficulty, again, I apologize for bringing up a Greek grammar, but as you know, it's what I do. If one backs up to chapter 27 again and verse 65, you know, Pilate said to them, the verb there could be translated either you have a guard, which means use some of your own troops, right, temple guards, Jewish troops, or an imperative, have a guard, here's a guard, use some of mine. And it's not clear which one, grammatically. But again, precisely as you said, because they're afraid of what Pilate would think, the religious leaders, who of course are like the leaders of every occupied group, and the Jews are occupied by Rome, right? They have to coordinate and cooperate with the Roman authority. So they promise that if Pilate hears it, somehow they'll make things right and keep the guards from getting in trouble.
This is this is one of those things that does persist to this day, not only among the Jews when Matthew's writing the gospel some decades later, but this is probably one of the leading contenders for the alternate theory to the bodily resurrection, and that is that the disciples did muster enough courage to go and somehow get the body out from under the nose of sleeping guards, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, and I was just thinking, you know, there's this, it's actually quite a huge book by the British scholar Tom Wright, N.T. Wright, The Resurrection of the Son of God. It's actually 800 pages long. But it's a wonderful, masterful book, quite scholarly, and he takes up just from the position of being an historian, although Wright is a believer, as an historian, what are the historical facts that we can show? And the first is that the tomb is empty. There seems to be no alternative ever around, except suggested much later on basis of no evidence whatsoever. And the other is that the risen Jesus appeared to the disciples, and here's the, this is such an important point, Todd, against all their expectation. See? So no one expected, because they weren't thinking in terms of God conquering death permanently through one man. Many Jews, of course, are expecting the day when God will intervene in the world and the Messiah will come and he'll raise the dead. Daniel chapter 12, Isaiah chapter 25, right? The Old Testament promises that on the last day God will raise up the dead and there'll be a general judgment. But no one really expected it to happen in advance to one person. So it doesn't do, as people say, well, the disciples wanted to make this happen, and so they stole the body and made up a story. I mean, they weren't expecting this at all, and it just doesn't make any sense, although it's been tried, to say that the disciples stole the body so that they could, what, get persecuted? They stole the body and made up a story so that they themselves could get martyred? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. But there's always ways to deny the truth. We're all guilty of that in small and large ways, and that's what's going on in the story in Matthew 28.
Is Matthew trying to emphasize, with about a minute here, that this stolen body story is a lie bought and paid for by the same men who had bought and paid for Jesus' wrongful conviction?
Yes, yes. And again, it shows, you know, in a way, everybody involved in the story, you know, all the bad guys, they're just normal people. They're just trying to do their job. They're trying to be sincere. But, you know, it just shows just how inadequate human sincerity is. It shows how inadequate people just trying to do their job. Pilate's just trying to do his job. He ends up crucifying the Son of God. The religious leaders are just trying to take care of Israel. They condemn him. They condemn the Son of God to death. So we human beings just trying to do our job, getting along, guess what? That's not good enough. See, that's not going to save anybody. But God intervenes. He sends his Son. He dies in our place. He rises from the dead. And that means that now we belong to him. And one day he's coming again. He's going to raise us from the dead.
With only about 30 seconds, talk about, in the face of this lie that persists, the truth of the proclamation made by the angel there to these women. He has risen, persists even stronger, proclaimed by Christ through his church. About 30 seconds.
It is the basis for our faith. It means that the creation is good, sin corrupted it, death is sin's handmaiden. God sent his Son into this world. He took sin on himself. He allowed himself to be killed, and then he overturned sin's tool, and he conquered our guilt. And by faith, we belong to him, and we're baptized to die and rise to a new life with him now, so that when he comes again, we will rise to a new life with him forever in a perfected creation.
Dr. Jeff Gibbs is professor of New Testament at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. He's author of the two-volume Concordia Commentary on Matthew. Dr. Gibbs, thanks for being our guest.
Todd, a blessed Easter season to you.
And to you. Folks, if you like the hymns of Easter, go to LutheranPublicRadio.org. It's all one word, LutheranPublicRadio.org, and you can listen to classical Christian Easter hymns 24/7 all through the season of Easter, LutheranPublicRadio.org. And speaking of Easter hymns, next hour we're going to study the hymn, I Know That My Redeemer Lives, with Dr. Ken Sherb. So, what's the message on this Easter Monday? It is the same as it always has been. Don't be afraid. Christ has risen. He has risen indeed. Don't be afraid. Just as he said, just as he promised, just as God had promised from the time of our fall into sin with Adam and Eve, just as he said, just as God had been saying all along, he is going to conquer sin and death and the devil. And the message that the church carries forth into the entire world that has seen its own subjection to sin, death, and the devil, in stark reality, the message that the church carries forth, that Christ carries forth, the risen Christ, into the world is, don't be afraid. I have conquered your sin and your death. In my death on the cross, I was crucified, and I have conquered death in my resurrection. And that means you need not fear sin. You need not fear the devil. You need not fear even death itself. So during this Easter season, don't be afraid. I'm Todd Wilkin. Christ is risen. More issues, etc., after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.